question, challenges and opportunities post COVID-19. So just to apprise you that who all are there on the panel, I just introduce Mr. Pradeep Multani, Vice President for PNG Chamber of Commerce and Industry. Mr. Ajay Poddar, you know him very well, sir. Mr. Ajay Poddar is the chairman for our International Affairs Committee for ASEAN, East Asia, and Enviro. He is also the MD for Environics. We have Mr. Vikram Gira. He is our chairman for International Affairs Committee for Europe and CPS. We have Mr. Nasir Zaidi, who is the chairman for our International Affairs Committee for Gulf.
Good afternoon, sir.
We have Mr. Vivek Agarwala, who is our chairman for the International Affairs Committee for Africa region. And we have Mr. Saurabh Sanyal, the Secretary General for PhD Chamber of Commerce and Industry. So I once again welcome you, sir, for this important session. And just to give you all a brief about His Excellency has joined as High Commissioner of India to the Republic of Singapore in November 2016. And he joined the Indian Foreign Services in 1991. He has served in Frankfurt and Berlin from 1993 to 1999. He also worked in the Americas Division of Ministry of External Affairs in Delhi from 1999 to 2004. He completed a 3-year tenure as counselor at the embassy in Kathmandu 2007. From 2007 to 10, he served as the counselor and minister for political affairs in Washington, D.C. and headed the Americas division in the Ministry of External Affairs from 2010 to 2012. The High Commissioner Ashraf, sir, has served as Joint Secretary in Prime Minister's Office under Prime Minister Dr. Manmohan Singh and then Prime Minister Shri Narendra Modi as well. His portfolio included external affairs, defense, National Security Council, Atomic Energy and Space. He returned to the Ministry of External Affairs in January 16 and was Joint Secretary Special Project until his appointment in Singapore. High Commissioner Ashraf, sir, he recently published a coffee table book of his photograph, A Day in the Life of Kathmandu, dedicated to the victims of Nepal earthquake of April 2000. His outdoor interests are basically tennis and trekking in Himalayas. This is a brief introduction about our Excellency and the Chief Guest for the day. Now I request our Vice President, Mr. Pradeep Multani ji, to give his opening remarks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Naveen Seth, and a very good morning to everyone. I welcome you to the webinar today on India-Singapore Business Promotion Challenges and Opportunities Post-COVID-19. We are honored to have with us His Excellency, Mr. Javed Ashraf, High Commissioner of India-Singapore, Mr. Ajay Poddar, Chairman International Affairs Committee for ASEAN, East Asia and Oceania PNG Chambers, Mr. Vivek Agarwala, Mr. Vikram, Mr. Nasir Zaidi, our chairs and co-chairs of International Affairs Committee of PhD, Mr. Saurabh Sanyal, Secretary General PhD, members of PhD Chamber of Commerce and Industry, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to extend a very warm welcome to His Excellency, Mr. Javed Ashraf, High Commissioner of India, Singapore. As you all are aware, PhD Chamber of Commerce and Industry has been working for the promotion of Indian industry, trade and entrepreneurship as a catalyst for the past 115 years and is a forward-looking, proactive and dynamic Pan-India FX organization present in 23 states and 2 union territories. As a partner in progress with industry and government, PhDCCI, with a special focus on MSMEs, works at the grassroots level from national and international linkages for public progress, harmony and integrated development of the Indian economy. The Chamber, as a facilitator of business and industry, has put significant efforts to expand India's investment ecosystem to new heights and takes proactive measures to foster and strengthen India's international linkages. Having said that, I am happy to inform you that PhDC CPI is holding interactive video conferences on a regular basis, bringing stakeholders, foreign missions, and Indian missions together to address our industry members. The close ties between India and Singapore have a history rooted in strong commercial, cultural, and people-to-people links across the millennium. India was one of the first countries to recognize Singapore in 1955. Following the conclusion of Comprehensive Economic Cooperation Agreement 2005, this robust relationship was elevated to a strategic partnership in 2015 during the visit of our Honorable Prime Minister Shri Narendra Modi on the occasion of the 50th anniversary of the establishment of diplomatic relations between our two wonderful countries. India and Singapore added new momentum and direction to the strategic partnership in 2018, anchored in the official visit of our Prime Minister Shri Narendra Modi to Singapore from 31st May to 2nd of June, and the second visit on 14th and 15th November for attending the ASEAN, India and related summits. Prime Minister of Singapore, Mr. Lee Hsien Loong, also visited India on 25th and 26th January 2018 to participate in the Republic Day celebrations in New Delhi and co-chair the 2018 ASEAN India Commemorative Summit. The pandemic and subsequent lockdown have very badly hit various sectors, including MSME, hospitality, civil aviation, agriculture, and allied sectors globally. Ease the pain and misery, the announcement of a bold economic relief package of Rs. 20 lakh crores by the Honorable Prime Minister of India for the year 2020, totaling to 10% of India's GDP, is highly laudable. I would request His Excellency to enlighten us on the approach adopted by the Singaporean government in containing the pandemic and its support to Singapore's business industry house in these very challenging times. PIG Chamber of Commerce and Industry has pledged to be the pillar of strength for building a self-reliant India based on the five pillars of economy, infrastructure, technology-driven system, vibrant demographic, and demand laid down by our Honorable Prime Minister Shri Narendra Modi. We are also happy to inform you that members of PIG CCI have been generously contributing to the PM CARES Fund. More than US$68 billion at present has contributed to the same, which has been rightly acknowledged by the Honorable Prime Minister. PIG, along with its member stakeholders, is committed to achieve the desired quantum jump in economic growth and build a world-class infrastructure promoting a progressive technology-driven system. Friends, before we conclude, I would like to also extend a heartfelt congratulations for His Excellency for his upcoming assignment as the Indian Ambassador to France. Excellency, we wish you all the best and look forward to your continued support and guidance. Thank you very much and God bless all.
Thank you very much, Vice President Sir, for setting the agenda for today and giving a brief about the relations we have with India and Singapore. I'm sure during the deliberations we will hear more from His Excellency. Now I would like to invite Mr. Ajay Poddar, Chairman for International Affairs Committee for ASEAN, East Asia and Oceania for PSD, and also the Managing Director for Synergy Environics Limited, to give a theme presentation about India and Singapore. And he is also the strategic partner for today's webinar for us. Mr. Ajay Poddar. To unmute, sir.
Thank you, Naveen. His Excellency, Mr. Javed Ashraf, High Commissioner of India, Singapore, Mr. Pradeep Multani, Mr. Saurabh Sanyal, my fellow chairs and co-chairs, and members of the audience and the panel. I heartily welcome to Excellency Javed Bhai. I really want to profusely thank you that in spite of your onerous commitments of sending thousands of people back, you have found time at our request to join us for this very important interaction. I'm also, of course, personally indebted to you for the kind of encouragement and for the kind of support that you have given me personally and our company in particular and encouraged us, you know, and openly advocated that we are one of the good examples of the Make in India and Innovated in India story. I'm also, the chamber is very indebted to you because in July, when you went to Singapore, you helped us organize the curtain raisers with various chambers of commerce leading up to the India-ASEAN summit. And then again, at our request, gave us the equal status to CII and Fiji, which had not been done before, as a national apex chamber in your September mega event, which was attended by more than 3,000 people. And of course, I think everybody knows what you did in those mega events. It was Industry 4.0, technology and innovation. It was showcasing India like never before. And because of that, we did get a fair number of delegates. During your tenure of 3.5 years or plus, you have done more for India's brand equity, respect, investment both ways. Other than the mega event that I'm referring to, there was an earlier one in the previous year, I think it was January, and you had prominent businessmen, you had chief ministers, you had cabinet ministers from India and all the ASEAN countries, and I haven't seen any event like this anywhere in India or anywhere in the world, leave alone Singapore. And of course, what people may not know here is that this event was also completely conceived and choreographed by you at the spectacular, I've not seen a sit-down dinner for 4,000 people, and with the kind of cultural show that you did. The figures speak for themselves. The FDI inflows in 1.5 years from, I think, March 2018 to September 2019 is about 25 billion, which is about 40% of India's total inflows. And of course, the reverse has also been true. Indian businessmen, India has invested a lot. So it's a very successful two-way model. More than 80% of listed offshore bonds by Indian issuers are listed on the SGX. And Singapore-based investors have assets under management more than 100 million in India. Temasek Holding, Singapore government has invested 400 million in national infrastructure investment in 18 after the PM's visit, and now is a major bidder. I see they are getting a lot of solar and wind projects in India. There are 9,000 companies from India and of course 440 companies. You know all this, so I don't have to tell you all this. I'm saying this for the benefit of maybe some of the participants. 9 Indian banks operate in Singapore, and SBI and ICICI have been granted qualifying full blank status with retail operations. And of course, during your tenure, you have seen that, you know, the DBS and the India-Singapore CEO Forum has taken root. There have been, of course, as our Vice President mentioned, two prime ministerial visits, which you have pretty successfully orchestrated. So, I mean, your kind of contribution during your tenure is completely unparalleled. And I have seen some interviews when you were about to leave, how Indian people in Singapore and the Singaporeans, they feel as if it's a national loss that you are going away from there. So, without doubt, you've been the best thing that has happened so far for India and Singapore. I look forward to your advice about future prospects of trade, investment, especially the scope of technology and R&D for India with Singapore. And my colleagues in the audience will, of course, be very fortunate to get a glimpse of your oratory skills and, of course, your deep knowledge and understanding. I'm sure you will do an encore in France whenever you get there. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Poddar, for giving us an overview on that. I'm sure His Excellency will be touching all the points which we have mentioned. But now I would like to invite His Excellency, Mr. Javed Ashraf, the High Commissioner in the High Commission of India, Singapore, to share his views with us.
Am I unmuted now?
Yes.
Okay. No, well, thanks very much. Good morning to everyone in Delhi. We are past nearly 1 o'clock here in Singapore. Mr. Multani, Mr. Ajay Poddar, we are all of you. Thank you for making this possible for us to meet through this virtual conference. And it is again, I think, a testimony to both the importance that the Chamber of Commerce attaches to relations with ASEAN and a tribute to your efforts that we are able to meet together and with such a strong participation today. Thank you very much for very, very generous and I think somewhat exaggerated introduction. Whatever we've achieved here in Singapore is the result of an extraordinary chemistry between the two countries. And first conference that I attended when I joined Singapore in November 2016 was the PhD Chamber delegation which came here in December. Sometime in the third week of December. And this might well be the last one that I'm doing before I leave Singapore for France. So it makes two very interesting bookends of my tenure here. And it, of course, means there was something very special for me in my relationship with PhD Chamber. I have to say that the Chamber has really come a long way since I have seen it in much earlier incarnations and in its role. It is really acquiring a profile as a national Atlas chamber. It has very dynamic membership. It has great vision, and it's thanks to the leadership that we are seeing a PhD becoming an important place for the Indian economy and the Indian industry, and a great bridge to the world. Now, we're meeting here in the midst of a pandemic of Singapore had its first case here on January 23rd. And for a while, it looked like doing well in COVID management would become a verb in the form of single rights. But then things began to slip a bit, both because of returning Singaporeans and permanent residents from abroad in the month of March, and subsequently an outbreak of infection in the dormitories which house foreign workers. Just to give you a sense of idea about what we are talking. There are about 303,000 foreign workers who live in dormitories in Singapore, in 43 purpose dormitories, some of which actually house 8,000 workers. There are about another 90,000 people living in factory converted dormitories, and about 35,000 living in independent houses, or let's put it this way, in the larger community outside the dormitories. And when the infection began to spread in the month of March, at the end, it actually grew quite exponentially. So from a number of 1,000 at the end of March, it became 16,000, and by the end of April, and then now it reached 34,000 at the end of May. However, with some really strong, proactive testing, isolation, contact tracing, and treatment, they've really brought it under control. Today, Singapore has largely brought down community infection cases to single digit, and it has stabilized the situation in the dormitories. So the cases which were averaging about 1,400 in the middle of April are now down to 300 to 400 a day. And that is also in the dormitories, and that's also because there is a proactive effort tracing and testing each of the foreign construction worker here in Singapore, whether they're living in dormitories or living in the city outside in rented apartments. So the situation is under control. They had imposed what they call circuit breaker, their own version of a lockdown. And that is the first phase of that is over, and they're expecting complete lifting of circuit breaker measures by the end of the month. Happened earlier. But there were, of course, very strong economic consequences. And for a country that is almost entirely dependent on the world for its economic well-being, I mean, it's really an intermediary nation at the center of global finance, trade, transportation, logistics, and education, travel and tourism. So it was hit quite badly. So they're expecting their economy to contract by -7% to -4% for the year. -7, they had earlier forecasted to be -4% to -1%, but they revised it downwards to -7% to -4% for the current fiscal. Remember, they've averaged a growth rate of 5.9% between 2010 and 2015, and thereafter about 2.9%. Their response to this has been four tranches of economic stimulus package in the months of Feb, March, April, and May, amounting to a total of $93 billion, which is 20% of Singapore's GDP. And for a country that usually has a balance or a surplus budget, they have been quite profligate now. They're going to run a deficit of 13.9% or 14% of the GDP this year. And they have accumulated huge amount of past reserves. The exact value of those reserves is considered a state secret. There's obviously in multiples of $100 billion. And it's only once before in its history that it has had to dip into its past reserves when it took out $4 billion during the global financial crisis. Now, this time over the course of these four budgets, they have dipped into their past reserves to the extent of $52 billion. So that extent tells you both the scale of the challenge and the magnitude of the response that they have mounted. Now, these are fundamentally in three broad baskets. One, of course, goes a long way in supporting workers. And they do this by giving companies a massive wage subsidy that in some cases, especially the worst affected industries, will be about 75% of the wage, up to a limit of 4,600 Singapore dollars. And in some cases, it will be 50%. They have provided workers who have lost a lot of income and extraordinary level of wage support. In some cases now, that is exceeding what they were actually earning while they were working. Because there's also the second basket, which is the support for families which have fallen in difficult times. And the third is for the industry, which is in really three categories: cash, credit, and cost. So how do they impact cost? It is really in terms of rental waivers for small businesses, or rental, and getting private sector landlords also to pass on the benefits of rental waivers. And the government, of course, for its own premises, is doing that, and that has really helped companies stay afloat. There is, of course, tax reliefs, and not just deferment of tax. There's also like a proper tax relief. We have over here subsidized credit and a new law that came into effect to not enforce contracts that have been entered into. So nobody can take someone for non-performance contract until this COVID epidemic lasts, which is quite a remarkable measure. Companies have also received degree of cash subsidy, and of course, as I said, credit guarantees and soft credit to stay afloat. These measures, that is to workers, to families, and to businesses, have together at least mitigated the impact so far. The unemployment rate, of course, has climbed 3.3% currently. For every 10 job seekers today, there are just 7 jobs. Which is an unusual situation for Singapore. Layoffs are still taking place, and some of that is, of course, affecting Indians who are working here, both in the workers' categories and the professional category. But as Singapore looks ahead, what is their grave challenges? And that's something that we want for us. One, of course, they expect a high degree of geopolitical challenges. They expect the world to be more bitter. more competitive and more contested. And the epicenter of this competition, especially between US and China, is going to play out in Southeast Asia. And Singapore, which has an extremely strong and deep relations with both China and in the United States, more with the US than with China, but is going to be really at the epicenter, the front line of this rising geopolitical competition. So as Prime Minister Lee has, in the course of the last 2 weeks, spoken twice about the challenges that small countries will face in terms of making it, having to be forced to make a choice between United States and China. So the geopolitical competition, and that's space that everybody had of being able to do well on both relationships, will be something that they concern about. Second, of course, is the fear of deglobalization and technological decoupling. As I said, for a country that has a trade to GDP ratio over 300%, and gets 18 million tourists, 19 million tourists per country, which has a resident population of 5.7 million. I mean, these are some real serious challenges. They expect, of course, that the world will not remain as connected as before. There will be efforts in all countries to some resilience, building measures, including as what we call self-reliance, near-shoring of supply chains, diversification of supply chains, efforts to reduce the concentration risk that come out of over-dependence on the factory of the world, which is China. And but they also draw a lot of optimism and confidence from their own human resources, of their efficiency, their very strong manufacturing base. I mean, for Singapore, has its trade, manufacturing is 20% of the GDP. And this is something that draw a lot of confidence in going ahead. But they've been working with a number of countries at the government level in particular to ensure that supply chains remain working and functioning. And as a result of these efforts, it might surprise you to know that their imports of food products actually was at the same level as in April and May of last year, previous year. So they have had joint statements with about 12 countries committing themselves to keep the supply chains open. The other area they're working on is a massive digitalization of their economy, which was already taking place, but I expect that to grow even more as we go ahead, especially in the MSME sector and the logistics and supply chain, because that's some area where they think they can build resilience. They will be looking for diversification of supply chains. And that is something that I should segue into for India. We had, during this pandemic, as far as the economic issues are concerned, three challenges as far as trade relations are concerned. One, of course, was that once we had our own lockdown, the supply chains broke down completely. Now, this is something that was perhaps not anticipated. 28 to 30% of rice consumed in Singapore comes from India. And it became a bit of a food security challenge. There was, and this is something, again, we need to look at, because when they compare with how suppliers in Wuhan responded, how suppliers in India responded during this lockdown, there was a vast difference. And it bears mentioning that they found that Wuhan suppliers, even though they weren't able to supply, were constantly in touch with the people over here. They were maintaining communications, and they were looking for alternatives by which their supply chains could be sustained. The second area, which is something which hasn't been spoken about much in India when we speak about the supply chain risks, is the services supply chain. Now, what China is in the manufacturing sector, we are in some sense in the supplies, in the services sector, in the not just in the BPO sector, but now increasingly in research, development, and design. But a lot of data-related work, design-related work, knowledge-related work is getting done in India. When we had a lockdown, a large number of companies were unable to get things back on track very quickly, because they found that it was not easy for them to set up the infrastructure for people to work out of home. Something we need to look at, because some of the companies are thinking reshoring some of the business they do in India, just as manufacturing companies are thinking of reshoring some of the business out of China. The third, of course, was that some of the medical supplies that they had contracted and paid for in India were then prohibited for exports because of our own export ban. It took a lot of intervention from us at the level of government, both for the agriculture and the medical supplies, for those to resume. It's something we need to bear in mind as we look forward. Mr. Poddar, of course, has spoken at length about the metrics of India-Singapore relationship. We have, of course, as he pointed out, Singapore is the largest source of investment in India and the leading source of both foreign portfolio investment and external commercial borrowings. We have India is, of course, also a major investor in Singapore, and it is really the leading destination for Indian investments abroad. We have 9,000 companies here, but also in terms of flows, a very significant flow. Cumulatively, since 2000, we're talking about close to $70 billion investments out of India into Singapore, and as compared to $97 billion of FDI from Singapore into India over this past two decades. But interestingly, we are the third largest source of tourism into Singapore. And it's about 1.45 million last year, growing at double-digit rates. So it's just behind China and Indonesia. And if you leave aside Indonesia, then it's really the second largest source of tourism here. We've done a lot of good work in recent years in technology and innovation and startups. Singapore remains the most attractive destination for Indian startups to raise capital, register IPR, and base themselves to go global. And similarly, in the area of fintech, we have done a lot of pioneering work, which is the first for India, including the interoperability of our payment systems. And we're working on a number of new areas, including which I'll talk about a little later. But as we go forward, we have to see how do we leverage in a post-pandemic world our relations with Singapore to advance the two objectives that Prime Minister Modi has set for us and the industry, which is to achieve a degree of self-reliance, and which is, he has clarified, does not mean a market way of looking at things. It's just being self-sustaining and self-generating and not being simply self-contained, and also to be part of the global supply chain and to enhance our export capabilities, particularly from the MSME sector. Now, so let me just look at it first from the point of view what we can do in terms of self-reliance and in terms of attracting more. So foreign direct investment and other capacities into India. So now, as Singapore looks at the evolving geopolitics, evolving trade tensions, and the future of supply chains and of the markets, India is certainly, and as my conversations with the ministers, and I just had a meeting with Prime Minister Lee here, India is really an area of high priority, notwithstanding the disappointment with them from their perspective of India not being part of the RCEP. And so I can see a great opportunity for capital moving more into India, as long as we are able to create the necessary conditions for it. And it isn't just about FDI. It is also about creating the right conditions for more flows of portfolio investment, debt investments, and financial capital going into both banking and other sectors. Support investments that are being made, because we really do need to look at both enhancing the financial pool base as well as the cost of capital as we look forward to becoming a more competitive economy. And I get this feeling from when I speak to funds, when I speak to banks, when I speak to other financial institutions, pension funds, etc., that they're looking at such more prospects. Second is that we must leverage their capacity to build industrial parks in India. Now, Singapore has done this in China. They've done that in Vietnam. They're doing that in Indonesia and many other countries. The advantage that they bring is when they have built industrial parks, for example, when Ascender Singridge in our capital land does that, or Sembcorp does it, they're able to bring in also investors to rent those industrial parks, as it were. So they have that brand value, they have that quality, they have their network. This is an area we need to work on. We used to work with developers over here for further urban development and habitats improvement. And the reason I'm saying this is because in Singapore, the one sector they expect not to pick up fully again is in the construction sector. And we expect a 10% contraction even in normal times. So that gives them a greater incentive to look outside Singapore. And India, of course, offers great opportunities. But it's something that we need. I spend a lot of time talking to the developers and things. They are interested, but we just don't seem to get government, industry, everyone to act in a concerted manner to make this. We shouldn't just be talking about Amravati and projects that are hard to digest in finance, but also about, you know, 100 acres, 200 acres, 300 acre projects, 50 hectares, things that actually can become, especially as our connectivity improves, of satellite towns, satellite integrated industrial parks, things that become then. And the third area linked to this is developing logistics, because Singapore has a great advantage in terms of logistics. They've got excellent logistics companies. I know that some of them are already investing. And one very interesting idea is that YCS, which is already present in a big way, has a major logistics academy, which is supported by the Singapore government. In the manufacturing sector, and while we're talking about industrial parks and logistics, we should try and attract them into areas like biomedical, pharmaceuticals, precision engineering, in electronics, in health tech and food processing. There is a great deal of interest in doing that. The other is, of course, they're keen to work with us on developing MSME clusters. They've done a great job of it in other countries. And this is an area which I think PhD Chamber should work on, and we'll talk about how we can connect the various stakeholders in this. Then, of course, is the skills. Now, we cannot be a manufacturing hub. We cannot be a self-reliant industrial country without reskilling and upskilling our people. By all accounts, in the formal sector, we have the lowest ratio of skilled employment. Now, this is again an area where we are, Singapore and India already have some strong partnerships, and we need to develop that more. And I think that PhD Chamber should see how we can, particularly in some important industrial pockets, work with IT. Now, I'll give you an example. Odisha is developing a world skills center. They had an 18-story building which was built for something else, repurposed for skills development. In ITE Singapore, which has taken equity stake in it, they will be part of the management, development of the curriculum, and so this is a long-term investment that they are making. Just yesterday, I had a meeting with Minister Ong Kang, who is Minister for Education and Skills Development. Again, he reiterated Singapore's interest. And his vision was very clear. He says, the only way they can support inclusive development in India is by working in the area of skills. So I can never overemphasize the importance of working in this area of skills. And finally, use Singapore as a place where you can, which is a hub for global business and regional business, to tap into the shifts that are taking place in the global supply chain, in the regional supply chain, in China plus one strategies. And we see a lot of businesses, both Chinese and foreign, moving out into Southeast Asia, to tap into some of them, both for in the Indian market and the other. So that is as far as I can see some very quick points as far as our FDI-related efforts would be, or our self-reliance efforts. In the area of exports, I'd say that there is a clear indication to us, and Minister Easwaran has, and I've met on this a couple of times, is that Singapore is saying we want to diversify our supply chain, and India is a priority. Now, immediate area that we were looking at was food, processed food, and as well as fresh. So we are talking about food grades, but we're also talking about fruits, vegetables, marine products, and also dairy products now. And they want to diversify away even from Malaysia and Indonesia because that's the principal source of their. But they say, look, we have some issues sometimes with them, so we can't get in here. And we've actually connected them with a beat. We've had video conferences even during the lockdown with Indian suppliers, Abida and their enterprise Singapore. This is again an area where we really need to work quickly, including on processed food. Medical supplies is again an area that we can work on. They've just imported 2.5 million tablets of hydroxychloroquine, but we were also supplying them raw material, methadone, polypropylene, and others for making masks and so this is again an area which has seen strong growth. You know, we did an analysis here, and I'll ask my office to share it with the PhD chamber. We did an analysis of 50 plus products which had been identified by WHO and World Customs Organization to be COVID-19 relevant supplies. And we found that in 26 of those, there had been a sharp increase in imports into Singapore from diverse sources, of course. So this gives us an opportunity to look at, because, you know, Singapore says no matter how hard they try to be self-reliant in critical supplies, they don't have the raw material. So they will really nearly continue to import. They can make some extra amount of masks and PPE equipment and some testing chemicals, etc. But so this is, again, something we will share with you. We also generally did an analysis for Ministry of Commerce on areas that could be opportunities for us to export. Now, let me pause here for a moment and say something about our trade. Because while we focus on the investments, India-Singapore trade has been fairly flat over the past decade. It has hovered below $20 billion USD since 2009-10. And it's important to understand, except for last year when it hit $27 billion, and that's a separate story why that happened, it is really around that. Our exports have been roughly around $9 billion flat, and imports have been $7 to $8 billion flat. Now, you'd be surprised to know that 50% of India's exports in value terms is on account of petroleum products. And that just shows that there could be opportunities for us not to be having basic raw material, but creating the capacities where we become important part of the global supply chain. But so it is remarkable we have such a narrow supply export basket. The next highest item is 3%, and that is jewelry. So exports is something, and I never hear delegations when they come to India or when they come to Singapore speak about exports. There is usually an emphasis for whichever chamber comes to, how can we get money in. We need to be more aggressive and proactive in exports. Of course, we have our domestic challenges which we have to address, but at least whenever we come out, we try and make the most of it. So this is again something which we will share with you, those lists of 39 products that we identified and sent to the Ministry of Commerce. Again, Singapore may have a very sophisticated high-end market for everything. So as all of you who are familiar with it, the brand value, the level of sophistication of rising from the purchasing power. But then Singapore is a hub for ASEAN region. For 640 million people with a relatively high purchasing power, 4 to 5% growth in the economy is a huge opportunity. I think we need to use Singapore as a platform, as a gateway, as a springboard to do more in that part of the world. Second, how do we participate in the digitalization drive taking place in ASEAN? We have the ecosystem. We've created the world's largest public digital infrastructure. And we've created the world's largest set of APIs that rides into all India stack. And we've phenomenal examples of innovation, both in the B2B and in the B2C sector. And I'll give you an example. When Prime Minister Modi launched a platform here called Apex, which connects financial institutions to fintech companies, very difficult for fintech companies to find markets outside their own market. 80 of those 200 fintech companies on that platform are from India. and 57 banks, some of them are Indians, but mostly global banks. So digitalization drive in the MSME sector, in the consumer sector, is this something we can participate in, or we lose that opportunity again to China or to some other countries? This is something where PhD Chamber, besides looking at traditional exports, must also look at how we can support this drive. Sorry, I'm taking a little bit of extra time on this. So in terms of strategy, of course, you know, some of the things that we work out, for example, we're working with Singapore to set up a platform called Business Sans Border. This is a digital hub that is in the pilot stage, a digital hub that is meant to connect different platforms. So if PhD Chamber has a digital platform for its members, it can connect through BSP to the global market. This is a pilot project. So from India, Trade Promotion Council is what we joined. Confederation of All India Traders, which is 70 million members, are going to join on it. We are talking to government e-marketplace as far as exports are concerned to bring them on board. This is an opportunity for us, and it is being driven by Monetary Authority of Singapore and Ministry of Information and Communication in Singapore. We are also setting up with Singapore a global stack based on India stack, which will help give our startups an opportunity to use the experience they have gained in the digital revolution in India to offer packages for financial inclusion, digitalization, and delivery of funding services to countries in ASEAN region. And finally, as I said, we need to work with Singapore government. Now, they have an office for Amaravati, which they have converted into a Singapore-India Partnership Office, SIPO. That office has funds, and we are working with them to see how we can connect the MSME sector, our niche sectors, our agriculture, dairy, and marine sectors to Singapore and the ASEAN market, and work, use the funds to help improve quality, help work on standards, work on policy dimensions. Now, if we, Washington government is now going to be looking, our government, for major reforms in the agricultural trade sector, because we keep changing export-import policy, nobody's going to use us as a long-term supplier. If you have a price issue in India and you say, okay, no more exports, people are not going to do this. So we would like to, at some point, connect you to the stakeholders in the government here who are working on the through the Singapore-India Partnership Office on developing linkages with the MSME and tech sector and traditional sector. That would be, of course, a good way to upgrade our capacity as well as find new opportunities in the market. So this is, in short, some thoughts that I had to share with the PhD Chamber of Commerce. There is an enormous opportunity and potential. When I look at the Indian diaspora here, and I'll give you one very short example that encapsulates the power that possibilities that we have, which is that there is a young fellow here who developed a device, an Indian fellow who's come here about 10 years ago. He set up his own startup here, which has developed a new device, which is, looks like Fitbit, but it measures using AI algorithm. It measures, of course, temperature. It measures fatigue level, heart rate, and SpO2 in the body. And the entire software, it has been obviously engineered in Bangalore. The product was manufactured in China. Now, when he presented this to Singapore government, it took them just 24 hours to make up their minds and order 50,000 pieces. It was just $18 for the product to buy 50,000 in 10 days and manage to deliver it to them, because they've given it to their workers in dormitories who do not show symptoms. So that, and it is synced through your phone into a central health monitoring system. Now, this is a classic example of a person who came here with beautiful and great innovation. Now that product is traveling to the United States, to Latin America, all in a matter of a few months. So we need to, and we've tried to create that platform of high conditions. I spoke about it to showcase both the traditional and the new that we have to offer. So both in terms of getting investments into India and being more aggressive in becoming part of the supply chain in exporting our products to ASEAN and beyond, I think we can do more over here than we have done here. And let's use this crisis as an opportunity to reimagine how we work and intensify our efforts going forward. Look forward to working with you and France as well, and continue this partnership. There is just a lot to be done there as well in its extraordinary range of areas. So we look forward to seeing you in Paris when things normalize, and wish you all the best for your continuing engagement here in Singapore and ASEAN, and all success for your members. Stay healthy, stay safe, and let's work together to revive the economy and take it forward in line with the vision that Prime Minister has outlined. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Your Excellency, for giving us the in-depth and detailed overview of what all is possible there. As you rightly mentioned, there are a lot of opportunities, sectors which are we have potential. As a PhD Chamber of Commerce and Industry, we are majorly representing the MSME sector. As you mentioned, there is a huge scope there. We would like to really work very closely with you on that part, take that further, as well as the skill development also, sir. I think now I would like to invite our members who will give some sectoral inputs so that we can have those discussions, and then we will take the question answer. To start with, I would like to invite our Vice President, sir, because he also represents the Ayush and pharma sector. I would like to invite him to hear his views.
Thank you, Mr. Naveen Seth, and indeed a wonderful presentation by you, Your Excellency. I come from the healthcare sector. Yesterday, I was listening to what our Honorable Prime Minister, Mr. Narendra Modi, said in his address to the nation. He stated, "Har wo cheez jise import karne ke liye desh majboor hai, वो भारत में ही कैसे बने, भविष्य में उन्हीं प्रोडक्ट्स का भारत एक्सपोर्टर कैसे बने, इस दिशा में हमें और तेजी से काम करना है." This was his address, message to the industry and to all the Indians in his address to the nation yesterday. The talk with respect to this, focusing on the Ayush and pharmaceutical and healthcare sectors, Your Excellency, we all know that COVID-19 has exposed the weakness in the healthcare systems across the globe. And we have seen that we will find more and more investments on wellness, healthcare, and preventive medicine. India is the pharmacy of the world. By exporting hydroxychloroquine all over the world, India has gained tremendous goodwill. However, we have a major issue because we import 80% of India's APIs. They all come from China. As you, Excellency, mentioned, that India is setting up industrial parks now. And precisely what you have suggested, the first industrial park for APIs is being set up in Haryana. And there is tremendous opportunity for India to tie up with companies across the globe when we can become self-reliant in the APIs and in the pharmaceutical sector. Also, of course, we are like hydroxychloroquine, we are exporting generic medicines across the line. And we definitely are the pharmacy of the world. We also have hospitals in India which are of world-class standard, best possible doctors and great equipment. We feel we can be also the hospitals for the world. And the treatment we can provide will be at 10% of the cost, as compared to whatever is the cost of treatment in the Western advanced worlds. However, we have again seen that we need many more hospitals, and there is tremendous scope to further expand and have more and more hospitals in India. Another sector where there is tremendous scope to have import substitution and also become exporters is on medical devices. Again, a great part of our medical devices, a great percentage of our medical devices are being imported. And there is great scope for Make in India, collaboration with world leaders, subsequently being exporters of medical devices. I come, sir, from the Ayush sector, Ayurveda, Yoga, Unani, Siddha, Homeopathy. Fortunately, our present government realizes the great potential of Ayush, and they have been promoting it in a very, very big way. We have seen how the modern system has faced severe, serious challenges and has been found wanting in this COVID-19 crisis. Now we have to learn to live with COVID-19, and the need of the hour is to build immunity. Ayush is outstanding in this. Our Ministry of Ayush has recommended use of Ayurvedic products like Aloe tablets, Devil Crush, Ayush Kada, which are proven over the centuries as efficacious immunity boosters. Yoga also is strongly recommended, and Ayurveda products have the opportunity to spread across the world. Like yoga has, it will soon be celebrating International Yoga Day on June 21st. Your Excellency, another great scope is for the Panchkarma treatment, which is being part of the Ayush sector. Kerala has got the best Panchkarma centers in the world, and this also has the potential to be exported, set up Panchkarma centers across the world, and also get more patients inside to our country from tourist point of view and treatment point of view. These are my suggestions. I think we have got great opportunity in healthcare and pharmaceuticals. We can definitely be in the top 5 in the sector if we all work with the support and cooperation of all. Thank you very much, Your Excellency.
Thank you. Thank you very much, sir. Now I invite Mr. Vivek Agarwala, Chairman for International Police Committee for Africa and Director for Timber Works, basically put his views on agriculture, food processing and timber sector.
Thank you, Naveen ji. His Excellency Shri Javed Ashraf ji, Shri Pradeep Multani ji, Vice President, PhDCCI, Shri Ajay Poddar ji, Chairman, International Affairs Committee for ASEAN Region, Shri Saurabh Sanyal ji, Secretary General, PhDCCI, Chairs, Co-Chairs, all present in this webinar. I welcome you all to this e-platform initiative of PhD Chamber of Commerce.
Vivek ji, I request Excellency, you to turn on your camera, sir. Vivek ji, you can switch on your camera. I can't see you.
It's okay now?
Yes, sir.
I welcome you all to this e-platform initiative of PhD Chamber of Commerce. His Excellency, it has been a pleasure to listen to you and get an overview of Singapore in today's perspective. The PhD has utilized digital technology very effectively during this lockdown time and has been able to connect with senior ministers, bureaucrats in the government, and also initiated various encouraging educational programs through this e-initiative. Sir, as you rightly said, that today PhD has emerged as a leading chamber of commerce in India, representing the MSME sector, and is well recognized and accepted by the government of India. In fact, most of the suggestions made by the chamber have been accepted by the government of India in the 20 lakh crore economic stimulus package rolled out by the government. Our Honorable Prime Minister has upheld and appreciated the works of PhD in his various tweets. The International Affairs Committee of PhDCCI has been very active and has connected with the ambassadors of India in various countries across the globe. Through this initiative, as a renewed foundation building measure during this lockdown time, the main idea is to introduce a new vision of India post-COVID and to promote bilateral trades and investment to new levels post-COVID. Sir, today agriculture sector has witnessed various reforms and innovative initiatives through the stimulus package announced recently. As we all know, India is one of the largest food grain producers in the world, and in 1920 our output has been 291 million tons. This is more than sufficient for our internal consumption and the food security for more than 3 years. India has a vision post-COVID to become the food and vegetable basket of the world. So this new concept is to create specialized manufacturing clusters.
It is here that we seek support from the Singapore government, Singaporean investors. There can be a proposal to create a MSME cluster of food processing with investment from Singapore. Singapore can be assured of a reliable supply chain from India.
Vivek, I'll have to interrupt. The ambassador has to leave in 5 minutes. So I think we'll have to, he has another engagement. So we'll have to be very brief and then.
Sure. Singapore can be sure of a reliable supply chain from India and take advantage of India's agro-produce and ensure a supply chain. So we look upon the embassy to push for increasing exposure to this sector by seeking B2B meets with businessmen of both the countries and by organizing through the chamber B2B meets and taking the initiative of investment in the agro sector. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Vivekji. So I now invite Mr. Narasir Zaidi, who represents the tourism and aviation sector, so put his views very briefly, sir. You need to unmute, sir.
Audible now?
Yes, sir.
His Excellency Mr. Javed Ashraf, my colleagues and members of the SDC's EI, I am members of the right. A personal confession, it gives me a great honor and pride to present my ideas to a fellow Slovenian and my college senior, which I just realized a while ago, and I had really did a quick one. I'll be very specific with regards to tourism, education, and education. Some of our points will be echoing the thoughts already shared by His Excellency and members of the panel. I will specifically emphasize on further strengthening of religious tourism to and from Singapore, which would be encouraging the people of Indian ethnicity to visit India more often, and people of the Muslim diaspora of Singapore to visit India and explore the possibilities of Malaysia. Further promoting will be the VFR, the visiting relatives, on occasions other than religious holidays. They can be different occasions, long weekends or holidays, which will be. This can be further strengthened by creating exchanges in youth programs in educational, technical, arts and culture, not just restrict ourselves to Singapore as a tourism shopping hub or India as just a home country. Education science can be created at high school levels and onwards, where we can facilitate tie-ups at educational levels and knowledge-based tie-ups with exchanges at all professional and technical institutes with various institutions. And aviation, Singapore is a very strategic location, and somehow there lies an immense potential for Singapore to be developed as a regional hub for Indian carriers to connect countries like Philippines, Timor, Fiji, and remote airports around. This is something for which the Indian carriers would need the support from the Indian High Commission in Singapore to be negotiating the bilaterals and put these. Well, this is it for me, ma'am. Now, thank you very much, and I hand it over to you.
Thank you, Nasirji. I now invite Mr. Vikram Gera to touch upon the banking and finance.
Thank you, Naveenji. Morning, everyone. His Excellency, Mr. Javed Ashrafji, Pradeep Multaniji, and all my other colleagues and panelists. It's a great opportunity for the chambers to host this while Mr. Javed Ashraf is there. I just want to touch upon one or two small points that the India's Department of Economic Affairs and Monetary Authority of Singapore has set up a joint working group. And both the organizations are working to create a payment connection to allow net cardholders to make payments at any rupee merchant in India, as well as rupee cardholders to make payments at NETS terminal in Singapore. A digital revolution anchored on the biometric identity of a billion plus people is sweeping through India. It has prompted financial inclusion, digital payments, and innovation on an extraordinary scale. Singapore a global financial hub has emerged as a leading center for fintech. Our partnership will not only support our two nations' progress in fintech, but also help our drive our international competitiveness and success in this area. The government of Maharashtra and MAS jointly participated in fintech projects such as blockchain and mobile payments, as well as established a fintech marketplace. The partnership would include jointly developed educational programs and discussions on regulatory models to drive innovation in the sector. I feel there's a huge, huge opportunity that Singapore and India can both collaborate on this particular sector. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Vikramji. His Excellency, just one more input we will take. We have Mr. Narendra Kumar, who is our Senior Managing Committee member and also a formal civil servant as well. And he was the ED of World Bank and first chairman of the Competition Commission of India. So Mr. Narendra Kumar, you can ask your question. Yes, please unmute him.
Thanks a lot indeed, Javed. It's a pleasure hearing you, your masterly presentation. And as the foreign minister last year mentioned, you are the best diplomat for India and we are really looking forward to your tenure in Paris as well. I just wanted to ask you that Singapore has been India's top foreign direct investment source so far. Post-COVID, most of the world countries have been adversely affected. Do you feel that post-COVID also, Singapore would continue to remain occupying the same position, number one? What is your assessment in view of the various difficulties which the world has been experiencing?
Thank you, Dhanendra ji. I think I request Your Excellency if you can give you your comment.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Good morning to you, sir. It's a pleasure to hear you and to speak to you over this medium today. I think I'll answer all the questions. All the points have been very, very important. Let me start with Ayush first. Again, an area of great priority for us in Singapore. Since the last 2-3 years, we've been trying to get Ayurveda a status of traditional medicine here to enable it to be accepted for insurance cover as well. Now, Ayurveda is quite widely practiced here, in part because of the Indian diaspora. The first Ayurveda clinic was set up in 1920 in Singapore, so it's almost 100 years since it was. Yeah, it is 100 years. But that will require legislative changes. But in the meantime, we've been able to get a lot of other hurdles and challenges out of the way for practice of Ayurveda here, working with the government, but to get a legislation done to have it treated as a traditional medicine and be given the status of medical treatment the same way as allopathic medicine is, will continue to take some effort. But in day-to-day practice, it is becoming very popular. We have got an Ayurveda Association of Ayurveda Practitioners Association of Singapore, ABAS, which has some outstanding practitioners used both by Indians as well as Chinese and Malay people in Singapore. So it remains a priority for us. And during, in the International Day of Yoga, every year we've had a big session, a big conference on Ayurveda, and we've had 400, 500 participants, and 600 participants over here. We did again on World Yoga Day, Yoga for Diabetes, Ayurveda and Yoga for Diabetes on the World Diabetes Day. So the constant efforts to promote its use. We did International Day of Yoga in 120 centers simultaneously in Singapore last year because we, instead of doing it in one large venue, it makes a good photo opportunity. We wanted to take it to communities, to people. And we got Singapore's People's Association, which is a grassroots organization, and Active SG, which is a sports organization in the community, participate with us. So it will remain a major priority for us. We're looking at issues of how do you get special permissions for technicians, let's say those who are not either doctors, but technicians to be able to come directly from India under their employment regulation. on the agriculture sector and food processing, it's a great idea, and I think we should, if the PhD chamber could identify a particular area and location, and I'm sure we can do that, we would be able to connect them with Enterprise Singapore, as well as with Singapore Food Association. Singapore Food Association took a delegation to India last year. Now, the head of that delegation had never been to India before. He came back, his eyes were completely, he's a transformed person. He said, look, I have missed out on something, not just in terms of what he saw in terms of consumption habits, but also the acceptance of diverse range of food in India. So they are very positive. They are very optimistic that they will be able to do something. And this is precisely what I suggested, that they set up an MSP cluster processing in India. It's an area we work on. Nasir Zaidi, I mean, I think all those three areas you've spoken about, each of those is a priority for us in terms of promoting religious tourism. In fact, we were talking also of the idea of seeing if Dehradun could be also designated as an international airport for, under a bilateral air services agreement. This is a huge market for world of the Dev Bhumi. There is something which we can certainly promote for the Buddhist tourism circuit. There is an enormous demand, and I'd say also for the for many of our Islamic, not just in terms of mosques and things, but also seminars and seminaries, also in terms of Sufi shrines. There's a great following. Remember, as in the case of Buddhism and Hinduism, in many ways, Islam also came to Southeast Asia through traders from South India. Similarly, for the Sikh community here, we have been encouraging them. We have been supporting them for their 15,000 strong Sikh community in Singapore to help them go on religious pilgrimages in India. And there's a direct flight actually from here to Amritsar, which is very popular. Connectivity is an important way of improving trade, tourism, investment in every respect. So we need to be able to improve connectivity. Now, you mentioned bilateral air services agreement. Actually, the bilateral air services agreement hasn't been revised because of India. And we are the ones who have been holding back and not revising it because we feel there is a certain asymmetry of capacity both in our in Air India as well as in our private carriers. And there is a feeling in governments that this becomes a way in which Singapore Airlines and its subsidiaries are able to take passengers for onward journey at the expense of Indian carriers. I think we need to take a look at this. Actually, the ASEAN-India Air Services Agreement is an open skies air services agreement for 18 destinations in India, except the six metros. And for those, we have seat capacities. Of course, most of the demand is from there. But I would say that, you know, once we come out of this crisis, which is going to affect the aviation sector the most, we would need to take a look at how we work on connectivity projects, particularly now connecting tier 2, tier 3. I'll give you an example. I think Madurai would be a... I mean, we talk of Yogyakarta, we talk of Borobudur, Siam Reap, gets millions and millions of tourists. Madurai is a wonderful campus. It would be a... And there is a direct connection from Singapore to Madurai by express. But I've requested Government of India Tourist Office, Tamil Nadu Tourist Office, I've requested Air India that we should mount a major campaign on those magnificent temples that we have over there to promote that. But nothing happens. We have to package tourism as an experience. Everybody knows that there is a product. You go to see a particular site, but you can see it like for a couple of hours, but what is your totality of experience? And from the time you arrive to the time you leave, what do you do for leisure? What do you do for eating? How's safety? How's travel? How's information? All those things become a part of their experience. And I think we have still got a long way to go in turning India's resources of tourism into major tourism. I mean, it is something for us to think about
that a country like Singapore has nothing by way of natural resources, by way of heritage monuments, anything, but gets 19 million tourists for 719 square kilometers and 5.7. I mean, I think the benefits of tourism for inclusive development, both regionally as well as in terms of employment generation, is just phenomenal. And this is something which I think we as chambers must also pay a lot of attention to. Education sector, we're doing quite a lot. We could certainly, and I agree with you, 2 days back I was addressing the ASEAN India Youth Summit. And I made the same point. We need to get our young people to do internships with each other, spend more time in colleges and universities, doing social projects also on climate change, on forestation, on health together. We are, you know, India, at Prime Minister Modi's, our Prime Minister's initiative, Prime Minister Modi had said in 2018 that we should have an India-Singapore hackathon. And we've had two editions of it, fantastic response from both sides. University students from India and Singapore. Now, we are going to do it as India-Singapore-ASEAN hackathon later this year. And the teams are not Indian teams competing with Singaporean teams, but Singaporean and Indian group working together on solving common problems. And the Prime Minister takes so much interest in it that he personally distributed awards on both occasions in company of a minister from Singapore, who flew down for just one day to be with Prime Minister at the prize distribution ceremony in Chennai, Madras. So, if we have to build this relationship, we've got to get our youth to learn more about each other. Singapore has this challenge. If their youth is too focused on Western countries, Australia and New Zealand, need to get them into India. And I think the PhD Chamber should run internship programs for Singaporean youth who want to work in India. CII has something like that. Now, let me come to the last point which you raised about civil aviation. See, Singapore has declared SIA as a strategic sector. So they're not pumping money into it, but they have allowed them to do a rights issue in which they would raise $8 billion to stay afloat. They are already beginning to open flights to various destinations. And I have, they've already begun upgrading. They use this opportunity to upgrade their full Terminal 2 into a new one like Terminal 4. So they have their eyes firmly fixed on the aviation market. For Singapore, aviation is existential. It isn't just about people being able to travel. It's about bringing business to Singapore. It's about bringing finance to Singapore. And it is about connecting, keeping Singapore relevant in this in the global economy. So for them, I have no doubts that they will come out on the top of the aviation sector. So I just had, in fact, a long chat with the CEO of SIA precisely on this point of how they look at the aviation sector going forward. They are worried about it at the moment because 96% of their capacity is unutilized. But starting this month, they're already beginning to launch flights to destinations that are safe. And we hope that we will be in a position to resume international travel from India to others, Singapore. Thank you very much. I hope I've been able to answer some of these questions.
Thank you very much, Excellency. So, as you have to leave early, so I request Mr. Saurabh Sanya, PhD Chamber, to propose the vote of thanks.
Thank you, Naveen. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. At the outset, I would like to thank Excellency Mr. Javed Ashrafji and our mission in Singapore for accepting our invitation to address our members today. Thank you so much, Excellency, for those excellent remarks and also the excellent overview of the India-Singapore business directives. Excellency, you rightly pointed out that this is the opportune time for the Indian businesses to create a new milestone in our bilateral relationship. Areas like manufacturing, IT, agriculture and agri-product, processed food, skill development will remain the emerging sectors of the post-COVID-19 times. Excellency, I would also like to express my heartfelt gratitude for appreciating the activities of the Chamber, and we assure you that we will work in closer partnership with the industry that we will work in and the Indian government in attracting more and more Singaporean investments into India as well as our businesses into Singapore by attracting more and more investments and also taking inbound and outbound delegations to increase our exports to Singapore, especially in the non-petroleum products, as was brought out by you. We would also like to forward to receive the list of products from your mission, as mentioned by you, and we'll work in identifying all the bilateral partnerships for these products. Sir, Excellency, the sectoral presentation which were made by our esteemed analysts, our chairmen and co-chairmen of the International Affairs Division, have clearly shown that sky is the limit in terms of furtherance of the historic and ever-growing relation between both our great nations. I hope all present today would have greatly benefited from today's session. My special thanks to all the participants and all the panelists who spoke today. I request all of us to carry this vote of thanks with acclamation. Thank you so much, Excellency, and everybody.
Thank you all. And I mentioned to all the attendees that we will take all the questions and compile and share with His Excellency and get back to them accordingly on that.
Yeah, we'll be happy to do that, answer all the questions as you have.
His Excellency, I have one question. With your permission, can I ask? It's on the food cluster. So how do we proceed in sending a proposal to the government with investment from Singapore to create a food cluster?
I'll just get back to you. I'll speak to our government as well. I mean, it's a very important suggestion, and I will revert to you. But let us keep this conversation going, and hopefully we'll be able to. Because you know what, here there is a lot of interest. We just need to connect you and our governments and them in a way that we actually achieve something out of it. There'll be permissions to be had from the government, but ultimately the responsibility to set up something and actually do it will be the industry. Right? So we will send a proposal to, and we will mention to government that PhD Chamber is very keen to be in this project. Thank you. We will connect you to Singapore government.
We'll keep in touch, sir.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much, Excellency. Thank you very much, Vice President, sir. Buddhas, sir.
Thank you.
Sir, Vivek ji, Vikram, sir. Thank you very much.
Great, sir.